I'm delighted to announce that the National Association for Primary Education has exclusively released a video from its Primary Education Summit, Visions for the Future. This video, recorded by me, Mark Taylor, and Elle Kingsley, talks about creating digital strategies for schools. This video is available for you to watch now at educationonfire.com/blog, which I really hope gives you a taster of some of the amazing content that was available as part of that Primary Education Summit. That's educationonfire.com/blog. I'm delighted to share I am now delivering podcast training courses for the London School of Public Relations. The one-day Essentials of Podcasting certificated short course is highly practical and packed full of useful information to get you on the road to producing your own professional podcasts. The podcast course will help you to create, edit, deliver, and promote your podcast. The course also provides useful tips and tricks on producing professional and effective results. So you can find out about these in-person and online training courses at educationonfire.com/LSPR. Hello, my name is Mark Taylor, and welcome to the Education on Fire podcast. Place for creative and inspiring learning from around the world. Listen to teachers, parents and mentors share how they are supporting children to live their best authentic life and are proving to be a guiding light to us all. Hello, welcome back to the Education on Fire podcast. Thank you so much for people who've been getting in touch. It's great to hear what you think of the show and how it's supporting you and what you're doing, and I really do appreciate the warm best wishes from everyone. So yeah, thank you so much indeed. Now, today I'm delighted to be chatting to Spencer Russell, and he's the founder of Toddlers Can Read. This is a groundbreaking program that helps thousands of parents across the world teach their children to read. His fierce conviction that every child deserves the best start in life inspired him to walk away from a comfortable salary job after teaching his son to read at just 2 years old. With a background as a former award-winning kindergarten and first grade teacher, Spencer has received widespread recognition as one of the most outstanding educators in his city, state, and national charter network. He's become a trailblazer in literacy innovation with his unique approach to education, leading him to amass over 2 million followers on social media. So not only have I loved chatting to Spencer about why he's doing it in his passion, but the way he's gone about it and changing the outlet and the ability for people to have touch points to learn about what he's doing and also then have that far reach across all of those 2 million plus people that are following him across his social media. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Spencer Russell, the founder of Toddlers Can Read. Hi, Spencer. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Education on Fire podcast. It's great to have someone who is embracing technology to make education what it can be in this sort of modern world. And I think having that child focus, that parent focus idea of being able to support children is something which is sort of at the heart of what we do here. All the stakeholders, everybody who's interested in supporting the children, whether they're teachers, parents, whatever that happens to be, is first and foremost, really. So, yeah, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm excited to talk more.
So why don't we start with that little journey between having a job, teaching, and then everything that you're doing now, you know, that kind of social media ability to be able to really bring so much amazing content to people.
Of course, there was one pit stop between teaching kids and what I'm doing now, which was teaching teachers.
Right.
So that was essentially professional job number two. Job number one was teaching kindergarten, first grade. Then teaching teachers, helping them understand some of the changes in literacy instruction that we've seen the last couple of years. And from that point to now, I think a large part of it is about just knowing what your passion is and what your interest is and what your care is. And during the pandemic, you saw so many small businesses start. I was no different, where you kind of sit back and realize that what you're doing now isn't what you always have to do. Things change and you can change with it. And I think it was a great point for me to reset and understand my passion teaching was working with little kids and working with their parents. And something I did often as a teacher was home visits and go in the house and work with the family and kind of talk them through. I think I have a passion and a love for just seeing the impact the parent can have on the child and not always taking responsibility myself as the teacher to be the one teaching, but to understand the parents can do it too. And, you know, kind of tapping into that and starting Toddlers Can Read. My work on social media is directly for the parent. I'm not making videos for little kids like a lot of people do, where the kid sits down and they watch the screen. I'm trying to reach the parents where they are, which is on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, and help them have the information to bring this into their home, which I think is going to be the most impactful change we make in literacy instruction, is going to be how well we equip parents. The stuff for teachers matters too. But I deeply believe in being able to empower parents through technology, through social media, through courses, through platforms, to be able to teach and support their kids.
And I think it's a really important distinction, isn't it? Because the reality is that as a parent myself, you know, there is that kind of always a barrier between yourself and school, you know, waiting for the next parents' evening or the letter that comes home, or just that kind of, oh, I think I need to have a conversation, but then sort of booking in a meeting, as opposed to that sense of, we're passionate about what we're doing. We have the ability to support our children. We have the expertise that we need, and we can just get on and do it. And I love the fact that so much of what you talk about is making it fun, making it engaging, making it appropriate. And then it suddenly doesn't feel like learning in that same way as kind of we now have to do our sort of reading homework kind of thing.
That's right. And if you think about that conversation with the teacher, even if you do wait to approach literacy to when you have this conversation with the teacher, you're now better equipped to understand what to talk about or what to ask or what those terms are that the teacher's using. There's a lot that gets lost in translation between teacher and parent if both are not comfortable in that interaction and the interchange of information. So parents should come to those meetings understanding what to ask, what to expect, understanding where their kid is at. And I think that's really important. And to the second piece here about making learning fun, it is incredibly important to find ways and strategies to personalize this for your kid. And I think the reason I stand behind parents so much is because parents have 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, if we're really pushing it, kids at home. But parents can find the one-on-one time to work with each kid in a way that teachers often can't. Not for any lack of trying, it's just a structural thing. I had 28 first graders in my class. So when I had my son, you know, working with one kid, even for a couple minutes a day, is so impactful compared to working with 28 or a small group of 6 or 7. So when you have just one kid or maybe 2 kids you work with at the same time, you can really personalize and find, what's that game you like to play? How can we build the letters in? What's that stage you're at with blending and combining those sounds? Okay, how do I work at just that stage to give you the support you need? So we can make it fun, and we can use data and our knowledge and understanding of all this stuff we learned about our kid to really tailor the reading lesson to them.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You as a parent know your child better than anyone else. So it's you're sort of taking out the barrier, but also taking out some of that time to get that going, because you, like I say, you're just inherently in their home. You know exactly where they are and what they're up to.
That's right. And, you know, parents do know their kid best, but they don't always know literacy best. Yeah, or for sure. Reading instruction best, right? In the same way that teachers might know that stuff really, really well, but they're not going to know the kid at that same level. So what I'm trying to do is pair those two things together and say, you know your kid really, really well. Now let's help you understand reading really, really well so you can give your kid the best experience.
And take us down that rabbit hole a little bit in terms of, you know, you're not teaching them to become teachers, you're teaching them to help their children to read. But by the same token, it's that kind of taking that barrier away, like you say, you're giving them what they need to support their children, but also not trying to make it like this is going to be a mammoth task in order to give them the skills that they're actually going to need sort of when you're sort of doing that one-on-one.
That's right. And it's a really interesting intersection if we think of, you know, being able to like kind of understand reading and being able to teach as like two different things. You need both. Like, you need to understand how your kid learns to read, that they need the phonic sounds, they need decoding, the ability to sound words out and piece those words together. But parents do need some of these teaching skills, like how to start a lesson, you know, what the first thing you say when you get to a lesson is, how to build momentum, how to start slow and build up, how to correct mistakes when they happen. Like, people need that too. And it is challenging, honestly, to take two fields that are kind of complex in reading and teaching and combine them in a way that both are easy. But that's what we try to do. So with the courses, it's not just here's how to teach reading, but it's here's how to teach reading and here's a lesson plan to follow. Say this first, then do this, then do this, then do this, then close and celebrate, do something fun. And it's that pairing that I think have been the most interesting task for me, because I've got all this information, teachers have all this information in our head that we teach for 8 hours in a day. How do we put that in 1 5-minute block for a parent with no teaching experience so they can understand? And oftentimes that just means, okay, start the lesson with explaining what you're going to do. Then start with the easy warm-up activity, review the stuff they've learned. Then move into the focus, spend 2 or 3 minutes there, then close it out, do a celebration, make sure you finish positive and are ready for the next day.
And sometimes it is just as that simple, isn't it, of just sort of seeing each of those steps. And also, I think you also start to realize that it's stuff that you are probably able to apply in other parts of your life as well. It might be how you do things at work. It might be how you do some of your parenting and that, you know, it's that kind of being able to make it feel like it's part of the journey, but then, like, say, also as a sort of a structured area of learning as well.
I think there's a big change that happens with a lot of the folks who either take my tips for free or pay for the courses, and they make the commitment to work with their kids in reading, where they realize it's that piece of intentionality and planning where you've set your intention to teach your kids something, you've done some learning and some education, and then you followed through on it. You've had a feedback cycle of messing up and trying again and messing up and trying again. You've understood, you know, day one was kind of sloppy, but day 10 was better. That translates. It translates to a lot of stuff. And yes, like, personally, I've taken the experience of teaching my son to read, and I've applied it to teaching him to ride his bike. And I'm like, I know nothing about bike riding, like literally nothing. I don't know how to teach this at all, but I did my research. I made my plan. I set my intention, and I approached it the same way as reading. And, you know, 2 weeks later, we're riding our bike. And I've heard very similar stories from a lot of people who just realize that there's kind of like parenting and going through the motions. And then there's a setting intention, whether it's about reading or anything else, anything you want to teach your kid really, really well, you can set an intention, make a plan, follow through, and your kid's going to have a much more positive experience than if we're kind of winging it or just addressing it when it comes up.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And so from a name of Toddlers Can Read, give us an idea of exactly the sort of the age group that you're talking about, and also maybe then the interactions that they might have obviously within the home. You know, like you said, you've got that intentionality of learning to read. Does that then spill over into other areas where they might be, whether it's in a nursery, whether it's in a school, and sort of what that sort of age group may well sort of have that sort of blended area?
The name Toddlers Can Read is an interesting one. I picked it because I thought it was going to catch people's attention. And I think it has. And the operative word in the title to me isn't even toddlers, it's can. It's this idea of they're capable. And what my business really stands for is anyone can learn to do this if you want them to. And what we've seen really interestingly is a huge part of our demographic is older students, older kids who are struggling with reading, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And the fastest growing population is adults who struggle with their reading, who struggle with literacy, who feel incredibly validated when they watch some of the instructional videos to know, okay, it wasn't just that I wasn't smart. It's that no one ever taught me like this. So that's, I think, the first framing is we certainly have a lot of parents of toddlers who, you know, follow along, who are working with their kids, but we also have a huge, huge age range for all different purposes. What we're looking for in terms of getting started with toddlers, it's less about age and more about stage. So developmentally, every toddler is going to be different. I got started with my son around 18 months. For some people, it's a little earlier. For many people, it's later. And we're looking for the child's oral language skills, their ability to say those letter sounds that you're going to be teaching them. Being able to say that sound is going to make it easier to learn that sound. We're looking for their memory. Are they not only able to say the sounds, but can they remember sounds from day to day? And if you've never done letter sounds with them, you can look at common objects. If you've taught them square or circle, or if you've taught them dog or cat, are they holding on to those objects from day to day? We're looking for their attention and focus. And here, what I really refer to is like our belief in their attention and focus. Because I don't think kids have to be like sitting still robots to be able to do this. I think we have to believe that they can focus on the letter sound, that we can find a game that's going to captivate and interest them. And it's our willingness to get started. And I think if those four things are hit, then age is much less important than whether they're developmentally at that stage. In terms of other things going on in their life, my best advice to parents is if reading is going to take away from anything else that you see as important for your child's development, anything at all, don't do it. If you're working on their speech and their oral language and you think this is going to take from that, don't do that. If you're working on this other motor skill or this other activity or this thing, or they're doing this in class and you think this is going to take your time away from them in those other areas, don't do it. But if you're looking at your child, their development, they're hitting these four milestones, and you think you could spend a couple minutes a day doing this and it's going to enrich and enhance their life instead of pull away from other things you want to focus on, then I say keep doing all that other stuff in their life and just try a couple minutes a day and see how it goes for you.
Yeah, I love that sort of real sort of idea of what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do it in that sort of wider landscape of their learning. I think it's fantastic. And for those people who remember what it was like being a parent and learning through the pandemic, how does that sort of come across in what you're trying to help them with? Because I know lots of parents struggled in the fact that children didn't necessarily want to listen to what they were doing. Was it that because they were then the parents and they were just at home and it was the pandemic and it was a certain situation? And how does that sort of, how do you get across that sort of difference of that relationship in order to obviously, like I say, get the success that you've had?
Right. I would love for all parents to just be ready for these situations regardless. You know, but by the time my business really picked up steam, kids were back in school. Parents were no longer their primary teacher. What we've seen is like a huge boost to my business, to this industry, is homeschooling parents and families, which those numbers have been the highest they've ever been in the wake of the pandemic, because people have worked with their kids and realized they really like it, or they've got a passion and a talent for it, or it allows them to do other things with their families. And I think, like, pandemic or not, it is helpful as the parent to have the knowledge of how to teach some of these base fundamental skills for your child. But in terms of, you know, just real talk, the difficulty of teaching your own kid, it is different. It is different, because something kids pick up on is, who are you in relation to me? And when I say something or do something, how do you react and how do you respond? And what's your pattern of behavior? And as a parent, you've had thousands and thousands and thousands of interactions with your kid. You don't all of a sudden sit down with some flashcards and a whiteboard and say, okay, now I'm your teacher. Like, you're the person that they've seen the last 10,000 times. And it can be hard to break that, versus a tutor or a teacher, someone they've never seen before, can come in with a certain energy day one. That's all they've ever seen. That's what they assume that person to be. This person comes in and I sit and listen. So it is inherently, for a lot of people, more challenging to be the parent and the teacher. But in the same token, once you figure out some of those teaching moves and you start to schedule a routine, it can be even easier than what it is at school, because you've got that relationship, you've got all those other interactions with them, those can become strengths. But initially, it's just a little bit challenging for your child to understand and see you in that role, especially if they're used to any sort of flaws at all before that point. Inconsistencies or saying one thing, doing another, they're going to call you on all of that once they get in the lesson.
Yeah, and I guess that's, like I say, there's sort of a driveway up to the point of starting something like this, isn't there? Like saying, it's really that intentionality, whereas the pandemic was kind of, here we are, off we go, and sort of doing it in sort of free form. Whereas I love that sort of real sort of analogy of just knowing, like, no, we're going to do this and we're going to set the scene and we're going to do it that way. And that's, you know, essentially the skills that you're able to give and provide. It really sort of comes across that it's about the whole package, rather than just, like, say, here's how you teach this particular word or this particular phrase, or how we're going to put all that together.
That's exactly it. And it's not just reading. It is about being able to have some sort of purpose in your work and your interactions with your kids, a belief that your kid can do it, and the follow through to make it through together. Like, when people explain their joy, it's not just the joy in the kid reading the first word. It's the joy in knowing that you, as the parent, were able to help your kid read their first word, and you can help them do other hard things too. And your kid's not going to grow up and remember, oh, my mommy or my daddy did these reading lessons with me. Like, they might forget about that. But what they're going to remember, if you take the lessons and apply them, is, my mommy and daddy always believed in me. When I needed to learn something, they supported me. They helped push me through, and they held me to high expectations. You know, like, they really pushed me to be my best. And that's what I want people to walk away with. Like, that's one of the most powerful things we can provide our kids. It's not just, can you read? But it's, when stuff happens in your life, can you support me through it? Can you help me understand it? Can you help me get better?
And I guess, really, that must be partly where you come in terms of providing the videos and, like, say, being on social media. That relationship, that understanding of who you are and how you can get across, is really impactful from that way. So is that a skill that you had before you started it? Is it a sort of an area of life that you enjoyed being involved in? And how did that sort of come about?
I feel like that's the best question I've gotten asked on a podcast before. And I've been on a lot of podcasts. And it kind of gets to this deep conviction I have. The same reason I love, you know, supporting and pushing parents to be better is because I have this belief about myself that, like, if there's something I don't know how to do or can't do, I can learn it and I can get better. And I think my ability to push and motivate people, I've had that, you know, in different stages of my life, whether on sports teams or as a teacher, a friend. Like, I am someone who pushes people and challenges people and encourages people, and I can make someone really motivated to do something. Being on camera, able to communicate that, is a completely different thing. And I had no skill on camera. I'm still developing my skill there. I'm still talking and speaking and then cutting and doing it again and thinking about ways I can do it better. So I think it's a marriage of some skills I've had, especially social skills growing up, which were really strong. But social media is different than social skills. It's about being able to create a really engaging hook on your video, which is a skill set. It's about being able to communicate at the right energy and vibration for your audience, which is a skill set. It's about being able to analyze data. And I've tried to put those two things together to reach an audience in a way that, like, I understand when you see the name Toddlers Can Read, you see a young Black male who is the face of this business, who's kind of pushing the envelope on what you typically see on Instagram from other toddler influencers, that can hit you a certain type of way. But my videos have to be so good and so engaging and so encouraging. My captions have to be so nuanced and encouraging that no matter where you're landing on the spectrum, whether you hate the idea of teaching your kid to read or not, you're at least open to hearing the message, receiving it, and potentially putting this in place with your kid.
I love it. And just take us a little bit further into it from a lifestyle point of view. Like I said, you sort of had those sort of three areas of career leading up. And, you know, everyone will know that sort of the day-to-day of being in school and the workloads and how that all works. So take us a little bit into kind of a day in a life or a week in a life of Spencer, if you like, and sort of the commonalities or the things which are, you know, the benefits or sort of the enjoyment you get from being able to sort of create that sort of different work-life balance.
Of course. Context that, you know, most people probably don't know. I am like an influencer, technically. If you can't see me, I'm putting air quotes around that because of the following, but I joined social media because I have a business, because I have a product and a service I wanted to get to parents and I understood where parents are. I think that's different from a lot of people who, like, their main thing is social media because they're kind of on it for themselves. Their product is them. Like, they want to get in front of people. If I could be off, I would. Like, I'm not on social media because I want people to see me. I'm on social media because I want people to support their kids. And I understand that you've got to have a face and a voice telling you that for you to understand. So social media is part of my day. It's not my job. My job is creating courses. So I spend a lot of time during the day reading different books on the science of reading or different strategies, trying to learn and put that together to update my courses. So we just finished updating our first course and we're about to finish updating our third course coming up. Then I've got a full-time team. Four full-time employees who work for me and with me. And I spend time checking with them, leading meetings. I just got off 3 hours of meetings before this podcast, kind of walking through the work we have to do getting ready for Black Friday. I spend time right now creating products. So a big thing we're doing is trying to get our own whiteboards, markers, erasers, printed handouts. And so we're doing a lot of work there with those folks. I spend a lot of time with email, customer support, messages, just folks reaching out who need help. And then probably the bucket people are most familiar with, which is content. And we have 2 to 3 days a week that we'll shoot content. I have a cameraman who comes over, we'll plan videos. I've got someone on my team who plans with me and we'll say, okay, here's the 6 videos we want to make. And we think through, okay, what's the best way to open this one? And what's the energy for this? What are 3 ways we can make this one video? Where can we put the text? What do we need to say? And we'll spend a lot of time and energy planning content, recording content, editing, posting, thinking of stories, You know, how do we share personal things with the audience without sharing too much? How do we build trust and showcase our products? So it's kind of all over the spectrum, from creating courses and learning about reading and all that good stuff, to social media, to managing a team, to creating products, and probably a lot of other stuff in between. I am working a lot more than I would like to. And I'm actively trying to get that work time down.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating for people to hear that, because let's say the perception and the reality, and every job has that you have to run your business, whether you're a teacher, like say, with, you know, even if you know as a parent, you know, the sort of the headline reels of what happens in a week only gets fulfilled by all the small little pieces that are put in place in order to make that a reality, whether it's the pickups and the shopping and the knowing where you are and where everyone is and that kind of thing. And I think just sort of it's a fascinating kind of insight into what people, like say, the visual idea of what that might be like, say, from a social media point of view, to the actual sort of the reality of running a business, which is essentially what you're doing. But then at the same time, when you've got that motivation of helping parents, supporting children to be able to have a real passion and to learn and be, you know, improving their life, you know, from whatever age they get involved in that, then you can see how all that comes together to create something which is really, really, really magical for people and really, really impactful. Tell me a little bit about where you'd like to see this going forward. So if you sort of start with, you know, the courses and things that you're already offering, and maybe how that's going to develop in sort of the next sort of 6 months to a year.
The biggest shift we're going to make with our courses is really making the transition from being an online course business to like a program business. Meaning, like right now, Toddlers Can Read is reading courses, and I want to be reading programs. When you think of a program, I think you think of a complete package. You buy the thing, and yes, there's a video component, but that's not it. There's a whiteboard, a marker, eraser, there's handouts, there's certificates to give your kid, there's books, you know, there's an organizer, there's a clipboard, all this stuff that you would need. And when people purchase something from me, I want them to get everything they need to get started. And initially I was resistant to this idea. I started with just the courses, because my thought, and I still believe this, is like, you can teach a kid to read with anything. You don't need anything but knowledge. You can do a paper, pencil, a dirt and a stick. Like, you can teach a kid to read with anything if you know how to do it. What I've realized is, when things are challenging, when things are new, when there's a lot of learning that you have to do to understand it, having to go out and buy additional materials or feel like you don't have everything you need to get started, it's just another barrier and roadblock towards people getting started. And I want to make this as easy as possible for people to get started, because once they do, they realize they can do it and they're kicking too. So biggest shift is just getting more supplies and more materials and bundling that all together. So when you purchase, you get this beautiful box to your house, your starter pack, everything you need. And past that, this is kind of past the 12-month period, is working with adults. You know, we want to get the toddler stuff, the elementary school stuff, the struggling reader stuff right. And we also see a tremendous need for adults to have their own self-paced courses and self-paced programs. And we already have a ton of trust with a lot of different adults who struggle with reading. We want to be able to provide them with what they're asking us for. We just can't do it at this stage yet, because we're still building on and improving the main stuff. So in the 3-year-ish, you know, 2 to 4 year window, you know, hopefully we have an Adults Can Read program as well. And really, truly, anyone who's struggling with reading, wants to read, wants to teach their kid how to read, is going to have some kind of program to support them.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm sure there'll be many people listening whose sort of heart sort of swells a little bit at that, because I mean, there'll be so many people that maybe that you do know, but also maybe people that you don't know because they're able to hide it, or it's not something that they're going to be telling people about. And so, you know, just, you'll know the numbers much more than me, but in terms of, it's probably striking how many people need that support compared to the people you think would need that support.
Yeah, we've got an average literacy rate in America of roughly an 8th grade level. These things change depending what study you're looking at, how you define these things, but roughly 8th grade, I've seen up to, I wouldn't quote me on this, I have to double check, 20% of American adults being functionally illiterate. certainly, either way, it is a high number. And like you said, people are faking it. Like there's people in your life, you, the podcaster, you, the listener, who can't read. And they've got a bank of words they've memorized, of high frequency words, contextual words. They can look at a stop sign. They know it says stop, right? But when they look at four random letters, they can't sound those things out and put them together. So they are waiting to order at restaurants until other people order. They are trying to hear the audio on the directions instead of read it. They're sending me voice messages about how they can't read and no one in their life knows instead of texting it out because they can't spell. You know, like it's just such a tremendous, tremendous number of people. And those messages are really sad to read because we get them daily and there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do except say, I'm so sorry. I hope to be able to support in the future.
But I think the reality is that you've set yourself up in such a professional stand is the wrong kind of way, but set yourself with that sort of foundation where for many years to come, you're going to help many more people than just the odd person you might be able to help sort of off the cuff, like you say, in the here and now. And I think being able to sort of step back and see that bigger picture and those long-term goals to fruition, to the amount of people you'll be able to help is going to be a very rewarding thing.
That's definitely the goal.
What was valuable about your own school experience? And is there a teacher or an experience that you remember that sort of had an impact? And this could be positive or negative, but I know often people who've then gone into education, they were sort of able to see it or adapt it or make it part of their sort of mission in terms of how they sort of utilize that in their own sort of career.
That's right. And I think a lot of folks who've gone into education, like myself, struggled at some point in education. I was a bad reader. When I said bad reader, I couldn't read before first grade. And I was actually homeschooled for kindergarten. So that's why I couldn't read, because I was just chilling at home being schooled, right? We're just like playing with pennies, essentially. And so when I got to first grade, the other kids could read, me and Joe Beth couldn't. So we were in a little reading group of two. I remember struggling through. Mrs. Snow, my first grade teacher, loved Mrs. Snow. She's very nice. All the notes are really positive. But when I think back to the person or people who made the difference, I think about my dad first, who showed up to school in shirt and tie so people knew to take him seriously and would defend me at any given chance to say, how are you serving my son? How are you helping my son? Did you know what he's capable of, right? Through high school, like he showed up at my boarding school to meet with teachers when I was like below a B and say, how are you supporting him? What are you doing? And in the same sense, he turned around and pushed me and say, how are you doing? I think it's a funny story. People might disagree, but in fourth grade, I hit a game-winning shot in basketball. And it was like this big moment. It's like 11 seconds left, got the ball, hit this running jumper, we won. I went home and I told my dad, he said, yeah, but are you getting game-winning grades? And I was like, that's pretty rough. But he was right. I mean, he was proud of me. It was just like a joke, but like I knew my whole life that was that expectation. So even though I came in behind where other kids were, him and also my mom were pushing and supporting me. And there was this bar that I knew I had to be performing. And when I wasn't, they came to support. And I think as like a young Black male in a predominantly like white situation where I didn't always have teachers with the same expectations for me and for my ability as my peers did, having my parents support me throughout the process was fundamental to going to a great high school, going to a great college, getting the job I got coming out. And, you know, it's not like I look back on my school experience and I'm like, oh, this teacher or this concept or this thing really made me excited about learning. I'm much more passionate about kids just having opportunities. Like it really is like, how do we support kids? Whether it's reading, math, writing, science, like it really doesn't matter to me. It's how are we supporting and lifting up kids to have every opportunity that we want them to have. And that's what my parents gave me, regardless of what my situation was.
And I think that's a really great example of the fact that children's learning is a melting pot of people, whether it's the school environment, it's the teacher, it's someone who's coaching your basketball team, your parents, everybody has an important part to play. And I think being able to speak to all of those people in a way that's going to be helpful is a really important thing. But I think also knowing that it's the fabric of all of that, and to be able to see what everybody's giving you in which way they're giving it to you, whether it's positive or negative, because at that point you start to realize what's important for yourself. And like I say, when you've got high expectations and people really pushing you, you start to see what's going to be working for you as opposed to what's not working for you. And then as you start to grow, and like I say, if you have that sort of rich environment to be able to do that, it gives you the best opportunity to put your best foot forward.
I agree.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, or indeed is there a piece of advice you give your younger self now, sort of looking back as a more mature Spencer, shall we say?
One piece of advice that I've held on to, it's not something someone has told me specifically, but something I've picked up on and learned through life, is everybody sucks when they first get started. And I give people this advice related to teaching. Parents specifically, when it's, you're looking at, you know, your kid's teacher and it seems like they've got it all together. All of these kids are listening to them and following the directions, but you get home and your kid won't listen to you and say, put your coat away, you know? But it really applies to most careers, most professions, most hobbies. Like, everybody sucks at the beginning. And that's what I would tell myself when I started teaching, having been really good at a lot of things before teaching, whether it was good at school by the time I graduated, or good at sports, or good at social interactions. Teaching is different. It's a different skill set, and it's a new skill set. It is new to be able to teach 5 and 6 year olds how to read. So like everyone who's new to it, I sucked. When you come into it with an attitude of like, I should be good at this because I'm good at other things, it's really disheartening, because you realize you're not good at it and you don't know who to blame or what to do. So oftentimes the person that gets blamed is the kids. It's, you're a bad kid, or you don't listen. Parents do this all the time on social media. My kid is hyperactive. My kid is whatever. My kid's blah, blah, blah. There's an entire culture online of people, you know, talking poorly about their kids. And I think it's really, really problematic, because the attitude lacks self-reflection and responsibility from the person whose primary job in life is to protect and to take care of that child. And when I started teaching, there was this attitude of like, my kids are bad. Like, these kids won't listen to me. These kids won't do this. These kids. And eventually I saw a teacher down the hall who, when my kids went to her classroom, they were amazing. And I watched her and watched her and watched her, and I watched my kids. And I had to realize it wasn't these kids, because these kids were doing great with her. It was me. And it's the fact that it was new. So I've either got to quit, I've got to stay the same and keep struggling, or I've got to get better. And I think that understanding, while to some people might be a barrier for beginning, because they'll say, okay, I don't want to start working with my kid because I'm going to suck. To me, I mean, that was a lifeboat. It was, I'm already in this. And if there's a way to get better, if she struggled too, and this is where she's at now, then I can get better too. And that's a piece of advice that I try to take with me as an entrepreneur, because every year, every month, you know, there's always something different and new that I have to learn to be able to support me and my family and my team, all these new skill sets, whether it's social media, whether it's being a guest on podcasts, whether it's being able to, you know, write pieces for articles, figure out online marketing. I mean, everything is brand new. And you saw yourself, everybody sucks at this at the beginning, but it's the people who commit themselves to learning and improving who eventually get over that hump and find success.
I love it. And I can identify with it so much, because as I'm a musician and as a music teacher, the one thing that is the biggest barrier for many children, especially in the early stages of when we're first working together, is the fact that it's one-on-one, which means there's nowhere to hide. And there's that expectation that I should just be able to play the drums. And, you know, I have the skill set to be able to make a good sort of first impression and to get them to play relatively quickly, so they can see what's possible in the enjoyment. But there's a certain amount of work that needs to go into it. And just understanding that it's that kind of, what is it we're trying to achieve here? You know, you're asking your body to do in a myriad of things it's never done before. The expectation that you're just going to be able to do it is just never going to be the case. Even if you're talented and you pick it up quickly, there's still that sort of that failure to begin with. But like I say, once you're able to embrace that and you can see how it works, you understand it's part of the process. And one of the things I say is that even now, you know, if I've got something hard to play, I go through exactly the same process of how to get better. Then all of a sudden the barriers come down and it becomes a joyful learning experience. And like you said, it applies to so many things you do in life. And it's such a privilege to be able to sort of share that sort of information in a school system, which often kind of is much more the kind of you should know it already, or you should just be able to turn up in and know what there is to be, you know, get an A on the test or to be able to sort of look like you're really in charge of everything that you're doing rather than actually learning.
Right. One of the authors that I follow, Brendan Burchard, says confidence is your belief in your ability to learn something. You understand that you can't do it now, but you believe in your ability to learn that thing or to pick that thing up. And I think it's incredibly important for us, and especially for kids too. When kids come to you in that situation, do you say it just like you said it to me? Or are there specific, you know, phrases or ideas or analogies that you've learned kind of help kids to realize that this is going to be kind of tough and then I'm going to get it?
There are a couple of analogies I use. One is the kind of the physicality, is the fact that, you know, you're able to, in your mind, you know what you're trying to do, and you're having to work out, or your body's working out, what all those connections are to be able to be looking at something, to hear something, to move your right arm, your left foot, your right foot, in a way that it's never done it before. So all those sort of neural pathways are having to grow. And each time that you do it, the pathway gets more embedded and therefore it becomes normal. And I sort of relate that back to when you first start school. And so if you sort of turned up at reception and someone says, right, can you just go to the music block? You'd be, I don't know how to get there. And they might give you a map and you might ask a couple of people and you get there. I also know that within a week, you probably didn't even realize you were going to the music block once you got to reception, but you've done it so many times and you've just done it. It's the same kind of principle. And once they kind of realize that they've been through this process in a different kind of way, then I think they understand that it's something which is integral to what they already knew. And then it sort of becomes less of an issue.
I love that.
Is there a resource you'd like to share? And this could be anything professional or personal, whether it's a podcast, video, film, book, song, something that you remember that you'd like to share with everyone.
Related to anything specifically?
Anything you like.
It's a wide question. You know, I'll share a resource today that stands out to me because I was recently in a situation where there was a parent who was asking for support. And the response that they received essentially was, this is too complicated, leave it to us. And from my perspective, I feel like as a teacher for 6 years, I dealt with hundreds of families who had been told, that's too complicated for you to understand, leave it to us. But sitting at their kitchen table, you realize really quickly, it's not too complicated. There isn't something special and magical about teachers, where our brains are that much smarter than parents, that only we can understand something and they can't. And I frankly don't care what someone's educational background is, right? Like, people can understand stuff, especially if it's going to relate and help their kids. So Phonics from A to Z, this is a book I keep close by Wiley Blevins. Phonics from A to Z, A Practical Guide, third edition, updated and revised. Probably my favorite book on teaching reading, because what Blevins does, which I think few people do, is he takes this wide range of knowledge and he boils it down into really practical tips, into really easy to understand charts and diagrams that parents can understand. And I'd recommended someone this book earlier today when they were told that's too complicated, leave it to us. My response was, I've got a book. If you look through this, it's certainly not going to be too complicated for you. And this is going to give you a lot of tools to help support your kid at home.
Yeah.
So Phonics A to Z from Blevins. There's tons of other books that I love. But him specifically, I feel like he gets it. He's got the teaching experience to back it up, working with kids directly. And I support him.
Yeah, I love that. And we'll have links to these things on the show notes as well, so people can find that easily. And just as we wrap up, the acronym FIRE is really important, obviously, here as part of Education on Fire. And by that, we mean feedback, inspiration, resilience, and empowerment. What is it that strikes you when you hear that?
I love all of those words. I think empowerment stands out to me specifically because that is what I try to do. It's about empowering and moving people to an action that might be difficult, that they might struggle with, that they might have kind of ups and downs with, but that ultimately I believe is going to benefit their kid, themselves, their relationship, and their ability to tackle other things in the future. I think this is where my message, my page, my brand differs from traditional reading programs, where it's here's the guide, follow it, or here's the curriculum, do it. You know, I've got all these books that are just packed full of info. But for a parent with one kid, two kids, three kids, four kids, five kids, a job, like things to do, meals to cook, laundry to do, like responsibilities, friends, family, like to find 5 minutes during the day can feel like a monumental task, especially if that time is going to take additional time preparing, practicing, getting ready, making mistakes. And I think a lot of people can know a lot about reading, but to be able to empower people to take a step and to do it is something I take great, great pride in. I think it's no small feat. And as much as I try to empower and motivate others, I'm constantly feeling like re-energized and motivated by people who are actually going out and doing it and then sharing it back with me. And that's the energy I try to give to the community. Is like, it's not just me talking about this, like people are doing this and you can do it too. So I love all those. I'm huge on feedback loops. I love feedback loops with some good data right in the middle, but the empowerment piece, I think specifically as it relates to education and the role of parents in education, I think we're missing that a lot. And I would love to have our parents feel empowered to support their kids at home in addition to what's happening at school.
I love that. And I think it comes across so much in all the things that you've put together and the way that you sort of articulated it today in our conversation. So Spencer, thank you so much indeed for sharing everything. Toddlers Could Read Everywhere is where you can find out everything that Spencer's up to, but we'll have links to all of those things in the show notes so you can click through to whichever particular channel's your favourite. But yeah, thanks again for sharing all of that and keep up the great work. And I'd love to keep in contact and see how that sort of adult training and all the development goes over the next coming years.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Amazing questions, seriously, and really enjoyed getting to talk to you.
Thank you for listening and being part of this wonderful community. With over 300 episodes, I've collated 20 resources from guests that have been on the show to help you in your educational journey and those of you involved with young people. Just go to educationonfire.com and you can sign up on the homepage. Thanks for listening to the Education on Fire podcast. For more information of each episode and to get in touch, go to educationonfire.com. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.